All right, so welcome back to our case studies portion of the Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System retreat. And here we're going to go through three separate cases that were submitted by three of our members. And they're all a little bit different. So they're all females, though, but they're all a little bit different. So thank you for being here. And I just want to make sure, like usual, I get this part out of the way, that we're not talking about medical care. We're not talking diagnosis and treatment unless you are licensed to do that and are sitting across from your client face to face in that therapeutic relationship. What we're doing is assessment and evaluation and looking for the roadblocks, looking for the obstacles that are keeping that person from reaching their full potential. And then helping them with a plan and educating them and giving them tools and resources so that they can remove those obstacles and move forward. And some of the cases you get are going to be really straightforward, like, you know, those cigarettes and the McDonald's and a lot of the other things that are going on could really be having a little impact. And other times you're going to have someone who has an impeccable diet and has been working on this for years, like one of the cases we're going to do today. And then you're going to sit there scratching your head, and that's when you're going to be really glad that you're here studying with me here, because we're going deep. We're helping you to go deep so that when the stuff you think is going to work doesn't, that you have some pathways and some ways of looking at it that might be different and may come up with something very useful for that person. All right. So case one, and this is Michelle's case. So Michelle, if you're on the line and I have any clarifying questions, I'll open up your line. Yeah, you are. So I'll open up your line when I have clarifying questions. So let me present what I know about this person. She is a 53-year-old female, and she's 5'4", 117 pounds. So she is not overweight by any stretch. She's perfect weight. And her problem is she can't digest fat. She's done everything under the sun and just not digesting fat. I feel like because I'm not digesting fats, that's clogging up my liver, gallbladder, and it's creating all this other stuff. I've been told that my detox pathways aren't working optimally, and I think it's all related. Every time I go to see my naturopath, she says I'm low on my healthy fats. Okay, so that's basically what she's saying. And I've shared with you on here so you can see it in the words of the client, because you're going to have to pull out of there. Sometimes they go on, and sometimes they just give you short stuff. This woman did not give us shortcuts. She gave us everything. So I always want to know, that's the first question, have them and describe in their own words. And the second question I ask, what are their top five health concerns? Now she's gone in and she's given us more diagnoses and labels for her health concern versus what an average client would do, because she's a health coach, versus what the average client might do, where they're going to say, well, I have gas and bloating, low energy, headaches. She's giving us, she wants to clear her gallbladder and liver so she can digest fats properly. That's not typical, but that is typical if your clients or patients are practitioners. She wants to improve her ability to cope with stress. That's her adrenals, right? She wants to improve and heal her detox pathways, which is pretty close to the top one, but she says she has a methylation issue and doesn't detox properly as per my MD. So the first thing I would ask here, and I want you to write some stuff down here, Michelle, as we're going along in terms of questions that I would ask, I'd say, well, what exactly does this mean? She has a methylation issue. What does she have? MTHFR? Is it heterozygous or homozygous? Because 40% of us have methylation issues, 45%. And it depends on the severity of it, how much it might be impacting. Also, there's other SNPs when you do a thing, CYP, cytochrome P450 SNPs, that show more specifically detox pathways. And they show specifically which items they may not be dealing with. Are they not dealing with heterocyclic amines, caffeine, cigarette smoke, etc., various drugs? So that's a question to ask. What is that? What makes her say that she has a methylation issue? I have methylation issues. I have two heterozygous MTHFRs. So the average 45% have at least one. I have two, and then there's people who have a double mutation. So I'm in a smaller percentage that has a double. But I detox fine because I've put the effort into it, right? And there's a lot of pieces that go into it. And a lot of detox has to do with emotions. And the liver is a seat of anger. So sometimes we're seeing that there's old wounds that have to be healed in order for people to be able to detox better. And they have to let go of some of the anger. So I'm going to be bringing in Western and Eastern stuff here. She says kidney weakness. Well, what does that mean? I continually deal with kidney infections. Wow. Ever since she got a staph infection when she had her son. So that tells me there's some immune system stuff going on here, right? There's her immune system's not strong. It's improved over the last 6 months, but when I do a cleanse or a detox, I notice it in my kidneys. And there are particular herbs and things, but kidney have to do with fear. And I hear a lot of fear in her answers here. You know, a lot of fear over, is she going to get better? Is this right? So fear and anger go together. And when people are have a combination of fear and anger in Chinese medicine, that affects their kidneys and their liver. And those are both major detox organs. Okay. And then thyroid imbalance. Her energy is low on some days. And it turns out she is on some thyroid medication. And we'll see that in a minute. She says this is up, this is a 10. This is of major importance. When you have somebody who says that they're a 10, that means I will do anything, which means this is a very coachable person. They are ready and they are willing to do the work. And you'll see by what she's done that she is. So if you have the sheet in front of you, and I'll just go through and summarize some of this on questions 4 and 5. Well, 4 is just more of the specific goals. But 5, what interventions have you taken to date to address these health concerns? So I'm just going to give you a sense. She says she's tried just about everything. She's done a gallbladder cleanse. I would be asking Michelle, what does that mean, a gallbladder cleanse? You know, is it one of the remove the stones type things? Is it with chancre piedra? What is it that she did? She's done green juicing. But what does that mean? Does she add a green juice in the morning to the regular food, or has she done a green juice cleanse? So that's a question to ask. So as I go through this, I'm trying to teach you not just like what I would do next with this person, but what are the questions? What are the clarifying questions that I would want to know more of? She's done enemas, and she describes more of that later. Essential oils, homeopathy, energy work, etc. I do try everything in food first and then supplements. So my question is always when somebody's tried everything is to make sure how long they've tried it and what was their criteria for determining whether it was working or not. Because some people will go just by the external symptoms and say this is not working, when indeed some of the biochemistry physiology is shifting and the symptoms just haven't caught up. So going back and doing follow-up labs is an important piece. So she said she's been following the Weston Price Foundation diet for the past 15 years. There's a lot of interpretation of what that is. When I hear the Weston Price diet, I think about heavy duty meat, high meat. I think about, you know, it's unprocessed and stuff. I think about if they do grains, they're soaked and there's other things. But I'd want to know what does that exactly mean. So I'd be asking her for a 5-day diet diary. Because what they say they've done and what they're actually doing is very different. So you really want to know what is it, this everything. You know, if she tried a 3-day juice cleanse and then she switched to, you know, a Weston Price type of a protocol and then she switched. So you want to find out how long she's been doing stuff and what is it that she's currently doing. Because obviously whatever she's currently doing isn't quite working, and what can we do to fine tune it. So I'd get a detailed diet diary for like 5 days, okay, and tell her not to filter it or change anything, to just write everything down. Okay, and I like to do diet mood, diet symptom, diet poop, whatever their issues are, have them keep track of the symptoms as well as the diet. But then she says she's been following Weston Price for 15 years. She's been following Body Ecology with Donna Gates for 15 years, and they're quite different diets. Did her protocol at one time before the GAPS diet. I did diet coconut water, kefir for almost 2 years. I think it was too long. What does that mean? I think it was too long. Right? I would ask her that. Why does she think it was too long? What were the symptoms? What happened to make her think it was too long? Then followed Dr. Natasha McBride's specific carbohydrate diet and realized that I couldn't digest fat by eating the bone broth. Okay, I want to know what are the symptoms she gets when she eats the fat. Is it the same when it's bone broth versus, you know, sprouted nuts and seeds versus avocado? What is it? And she talked about what she does as a probiotic, sauerkraut along with Saccharomyces boulardii, and it worked great for a while. Okay, I would be asking for how long and then what, right? At that time, here's a biggie. I was living in a house with radon. So not only does she have mental emotional stress, which we'll get to, she was living in a house with radon, and she says later on that her kids got sick a lot. I wondered about that. But she's worked with a lot of people who know what they're doing. Dr. Brownstein diagnosed her with Hashimoto's, helped her get on iodine, took her off nightshades, gluten, and other inflammatory foods. I'd like to know how long ago was that she worked with Dr. Brownstein, because if she was doing all this other stuff, like she said, for 15 years, was it just a year ago that she worked with Dr. Brownstein, or was that, you know, 7 or 8 years ago? So how long has she been off of gluten and the other inflammatory foods? And has it been time enough? And has she been doing a gut repair program to get it back? So timing is really important. She said he was the first to address the thyroid issue. During this time, I started eating organic foods, raw milk, and working on an organic farm. I would be looking at, is she still drinking raw milk? Is she drinking dairy products? That could be a source of allergen or problems as well. Been working with Summer Bach and done her probiotic cleanse program and gut rebuilding program, and helped her determine that she has a histamine issue. That was since last April. And she's noticing a difference. That's good. So it says there's something there related to the gut flora, because there's a lot of probiotic supplementation in there. In tune with my body and know immediately when I've been exposed to something. Working with her and doing her protocols has decreased reaction, like headaches, runny nose, fever, eyes, nose, and itching. So we know she's on the right track when she's doing some fermentation and gut rebuilding. So that's good. She's been giving herself coffee enemas for 4 years. I would want to know how often. Is it daily, weekly, twice daily? 2-quart sea salt enemas, incorporating essential oils with the enemas. Now, you want to be careful. Is she doing these enemas? Is she replenishing her flora after she does the enemas? So what that means is not just orally, but you can do it in the enema itself. You put some probiotics, because you really disrupt the flora when you do enemas that frequently. And she says that doing all this detox work has helped. So it sounds like she's making progress. She's just stuck with, you know, and the main thing seems to be that she can't digest fat. And I'll open up your line in a little while when we get through this to just ask a couple of questions if you know what that means about her not being able to digest fat, what kind of problems it is. So she said she started using the activation products 6 months ago, which is the phytoplankton, magnesium spray, coriander, flax oil, on and off. Body likes these products. My body loves essential oils. So I would ask her, why on and off if your body loves it? Okay. Once I discovered I had the histamine, I backed off. Histamine issue hasn't gone away completely, but significantly reduced by doing the probiotic cleanse. So I would be, you know, just a lot more detail asking her specific stuff face to face with her. She talks about the different practitioners. She has a naturopath that muscle tests the supplements, the chiropractor once a month to align her jaw and her body. A core sync practitioner for energy work to balance body and de-stress, an MD as needed to get testing done, B12 shots and nature thyroid, and that's that. So pretty extensive history, and I'm just going to open up Michelle's line and ask if Michelle knows what the symptoms are that she gets when she eats fats that makes her think she doesn't digest fats. So Michelle.
Hey, I think her symptoms are she doesn't feel good. She gets, I'm texting her too to try to get more. She says the broth makes her gassy. She gets a stomach ache, like a trapped gas feeling.
Yeah. What about the other kinds of fats, avocados? Is it all the same?
She said the avocados make her do that. She doesn't really do nuts that much. But I know we talked the other day and she said that she does nuts and seeds minimally, but when she does, sometimes she feels that same way, so she just doesn't do them a lot or eat them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She gets it's lower stomach, indigestion, gassy.
Okay.
She worked with Dr. Brownstein like 15 years ago.
Okay. So she's been off gluten for about 15 years then.
Yep, she's been off gluten for 15 years. She also has been off regular dairy for 15 years. She does do some raw dairy, but more specifically, she does like goat milk. If she does And I know more recently, I would say like this last summer to now, she even like went off of that when she was, when she started working with Summer, she had her go through like a gut rebuilding program where she did, basically like juices, and it's kind of reminded me of the like leaky gut protocol.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're doing mostly greens and then you're adding things into it, but you're not doing any meat or, she really is reactive to a lot of things that she tries to eat.
Okay. Did I answer
yeah. pretty much?
Yeah, that's perfect.
That?
Yeah, that's perfect. Okay. And so, you know, what you're saying here.
So it's not just the, it's not just the fats.
It's not just
like there's a lot of things that she's reactive to.
Right. And the other thing, what you said, I would want to know, does she have a problem with oil? Does she do any like coconut oil or olive oil? Does that cause the problem? Because there's a connection between the bone broth and like avocado. They're high in FODMAPs. So she may have a FODMAP sensitivity and it might be a saccharide rather than a fat problem. So I would be asking her about olive oil and coconut oil and if she tries any of that or if she just stays away because she's afraid that it's the fat issue.
I know that she uses only the healthy oils. I'm texting her to
Right, but does she get the gas and bloating from the oils? Is what I'm asking. Cuz if she doesn't, that's concentrated fat, then that says it's more likely to be a problem not with fat, but with the carbohydrate in those foods, the FODMAPs, the specific disaccharides and etc.
Okay.
All right. So type it into the chat so I'll move on for this and just type in the answer in the chat and we'll
Okay,
it.
I will.
Okay. Good.
When she
Thanks.
Responds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. It's great to be able to have access to the person at the time, too. Okay. So, yeah. So what habits that influence your health? Well, she does organic foods, juicings, enemas, sauna, raises her own food, and she does sleep. So this is good. She's got a lot of great habits. What habits does she negatively do too much, not getting enough me time? So there's the stress piece, right? The give, give, give. What major stressors? Having to do everything herself. So she feels the weight of the world on her shoulders. Her family doesn't help. Her husband spends too much money, especially, I don't know if it's her husband's upset because she spends too much money trying to figure out her health issues and buy the things I need because I'm sensitive. And she has teenagers. So a lot of stress in her life. A lot of stress in her life. However, here's the thing. Stress, the external stresses are not what causes the reaction on the inside. When you learn to manage that, it doesn't matter what's going on. I've had a lot of stress happen in my life over the last year, and I won't even go into what all those things are. But I've learned through my coping techniques not to allow that to affect my body. And that's the stuff we want to be able to teach people, whether it's tapping, whether it's, you know, some kind of emotional cleansing work, whether it's heart math. It's really helping them to see, like, she has the victim. I mean, I'm not saying she's a victim mentality because I don't know her. But it's that it has to do with outside. I don't have time to take care of me. And sometimes when people are in a situation like that, their illness is the one thing that lets them get attention. That lets them off the hook for having to take care of everybody. That gives them the opportunity to take care of them. And I don't know if that's the situation here, Michelle. I'm just throwing it out there that that's the stuff we look for. What happens if she lets go of this illness, you know, this stuff? It might be that, oh my God, what would I have to do then? I'd have to do more. I'd have to do even more. And she may not be conscious of it at all. Probably not. So Steph is saying that fat malabsorption is class B hominis. Okay, so that's a gut bug. And the thing that people are saying right here is that the things that are missing, she's got all these tests of, like, she had this heart test and she had this osteoporosis. She has all these tests, but she doesn't have the right test. She doesn't have a stool test. She doesn't have an oat test, because I think that that stuff would be the what would help to pinpoint what's going on. So thank you guys. You guys are good students and you know what you're doing. So Steph said H. pylori and blastocystis. So a stool test, and then Jamie, you know, is the oat test, because there's a lot of stuff in there that we can find. In addition to the gut bugs, you can find out about the ketones. Yeah. So if she's resistant to getting some tests, then you're not going to be able to, you're just going to keep guessing. And the money she's spending on interventions can be wasted when you don't come back and test. I'm not a big fan of testing everybody right away. Let's spend their money otherwise. But she's been trying to fix this for 15 years and she's never gotten a test. So that's really important. Jamie said, yeah, great point. It gives them significance, which is that need that many people have. And that's what a lot of people stay this way. So she definitely needs to get some tests done. I would say, well, you know, between the oat and the other, I would do both. I would do a stool test. She can start with something like the BioHealth 401H and then the oat test. That's the two I would recommend. Okay, so she's only resistant because she doesn't know which test to get. So great. We've just told her. I would say the 401H to start and then the oat test. Those are the two I would start with. She has the same symptoms with olive oil, but not so much with coconut oil, okay? Anybody want to venture a guess onto why, before I tell you why that she would have problems with olive oil? So I think she does have a fat problem. Why would she have a problem with olive oil, but not so much with coconut? Anybody? Oleic acid? Nah, you're on the right track. It's a difference between the types of fatty acids, MCTs. Thank you, Jamie. Yeah. So coconut oil has a lot of MCT, medium chain triglyceride. Medium chain triglyceride does not require bile to emulsify it for it to be picked up. It just gets picked up into the chylomicrons in the lining of the gut. So when people say, I have no problem with coconut oil, but I have problem with any other oil, I'm saying that they are having problem with their liver gallbladder, right? Because they're having trouble with breaking down the fats because their bile is maybe stagnant. It's not moving. And the coconut oil is mostly MCTs, but it's not all MCTs. Now, if she were to try MCT oil, she might digest that just fine. So, yep, you guys are smart. You got it. Vanessa said coconut not processed by the liver. Right, exactly. See, all of you are right. All of you are right. So this is great. We're putting our heads together to help her solve this problem. What else do we have on here? So she says her stress level is 5 to 6 most of the time. Let's just see what's next. Listing medications. The only thing she's taking is a Naturthroid and a compounded methylcobalamin. Wow, 5,000 micrograms. I would be checking to see if it's methylcobalamin. Is she doing folate as well? Is she doing some folate? Because she has the MTHFR SNPs, the folate is important as well. Other things that you have to be careful of, if she's going on that much methylcobalamin and she's got some other SNPs like her COM-T SNPs that are impaired, that might be too much methyl. So I would be looking at what some of the rest of her genetics are. Okay, so the surgeries that we had a long list, and I'm going to go through that. And Jamie says something here that is a good point. Has she tried? But that was one of my things too. On my when I get to the what I would recommend that she try would be bile salts and carnitine. Absolutely excellent. The bile salts are what helps you to break down the fats. So if she's got a clogged liver, it's a solution that will give it's like a symptom solution. But it's really like why is her liver gallbladder backed up? Okay, why is it stagnant? Why does she have a stagnant liver or bile flow out of the gallbladder? I'm assuming she has her gallbladder because she didn't list that as one of her surgeries. Okay, so also which fatty acids is she deficient in? And I think, Lynn, that's a good idea for a blood spot fatty acid test, but I would say that it's not as critical as the other two. I mean, I love the blood spot fatty acid, and that would give us some good numbers too if she's willing to do all three. And yes, she has her gallbladder. She tested negative to 677T, but has homozygous. Homozygous meaning it's red, correct? That she has two genes for it? I just want to make sure that we're clear here. Fortunately, the A1298C isn't as impactful on a lot of the symptoms as the 677. But if she has had a full genetic panel, ask her what her COMT is, catecholaminomethyltransferase, because that's an important one to know when we see if there's some backups. And I'd also want to be looking at some other things, but it's beyond that. I uploaded the results to you under SpectraCell lab results. I didn't see that. Would you upload that before or just now? I didn't see that one. Lynn, if you can open that one up, and if it's there, open it up and just let us know what they did. They usually just do the MTHFR, though. So these are, I mean, she's had surgeries since she was born. She has a lot of trauma that's stored in her body, and trauma healing kind of work can be very helpful as well from an energetic standpoint. She started out when she had pneumonia at 6 months old and almost died and had high-dose antibiotics. So there, her flora was completely destroyed back then. Probably nobody told her about probiotics. At age 4, she had surgery to correct an eye. And her self-esteem issues were there because of being teased. Then at age 5, she was sexually abused by an older neighbor kid. Another hit on the self-esteem. I mean, stress after stress after stress on this young life, okay? Her adrenals have been shot from day 1. Third-degree burns at age 7. All of her body had to sit in chemical tanks and have dead skin burned off. This is all up until she was 7. Listen to all this. Very self-conscious because she has these parts of her body burned off. She was always sick with stomach aches, pneumonia, cluster migraines, even throughout her pregnancies. At 11, she had skin grafts, lots of scar tissue. Age 16, lots of cryosurgeries due to lots of yeast from antibiotics, cryosurgeries when they burn the tissue in the cervix. This poor woman, I mean. And then she had 3 babies in a row at age 19, 21, and 23. Age 25 started experiencing pain with ovulation. You know, when I talk about the liver, right, I mean, anger can be huge and maybe buried in unexpressed anger because it wasn't okay. But any kind of abuse and traumas like this can create a lot. Okay, so wow. In her 20s, interstitial cystitis, so there's you know, the urinary tract. They stretched her bladder more. She's been on so many antibiotics. So yeah, having overgrowth of bad bacteria is huge. She's gotten results by doing this cleanse with summer. That's great. But I think if she really wants to accelerate this, probably getting some more specific testing and really targeting her probiotics and her herbs is going to make a difference. Again, at 35 and 38, two full-term pregnancies and normal births. So that's 2 more full-term pregnancies. So she had them earlier on, then she had 2 more. So she has 5 children, staph infection, hospital with fever, high-level antibiotics again, relocated to North Dakota, extreme stress with her husband traveling, caring for her baby, adrenal crashed and couldn't get out of bed. Doctor wanted her to do Wilson's protocol supplements, but she was so sensitive she couldn't do those supplements. Panic attacks. Turned to Young Living products and got really good results with that. So there's definite improvement and she is on the mend. Started to go to Michelle for colonics and coffee enemas for detoxing. Did some Gerson therapy. In age 49, had a Zyto scan. I think that's something that Young Living does to look, and they indicated the radon, and they figured out that the home had the high radon levels, and the kids were sick a lot, so she'd been exposed this whole time and living in this house in Michigan. At age 52, she had some kind of growth on her fingernail bed, some kind of cyst that had surgically removed, did some black salve, did coffee enemas, noticed possible SIBO symptoms improving, started doing sea salt and essential oils in the end, and then the kidneys improved. So she is on the mend and she is improving. So it's not like your classic, this isn't improving. I think there's just some things there that are not being addressed that might be addressed if she continues on this path that she's going with doing the work with Summer. But I think she could fine tune it and see if there's any, I don't know about the H. pylori. When we look at her gut tests, there's just no indication of stomach stuff, but mostly large intestine and liver gallbladder. So, the probiotics, the overgrowths, and there's not a high score on her candida assessment either, which we'll see. So long history. The woman has had been trauma her whole life. So there's going to be a lot of emotional scarring here as well. So in light of the fact that maybe not the H. pylori, the doctor's data, although slightly less accurate for the Bahamanist. So one or the other, I think we can discuss that a little bit further. I tend to like the doctor's data because it gives us specifics, like which targeted herbs would be used to get rid of which things. Yeah, I'm sure there's some kind of an ongoing infection. When we look at, I think it's probably virus, but it might be parasites or whatever, because well, when you see her lab tests, you'll see that she has elevated lymphocytes and low neutrophils. Yeah, so nutritional herbs, she's taking Young Living Super B, standard process zinc, B12 spray plus the shots, D3, 500 IUs, last test was at 70, good. She's taking Summerbox protein powders, B6 flax oil, linum B6 flax oil cap, okay. Ocean's Alive, Ninja Red, magnesium, and so she's taking a bunch of stuff, not necessarily taking stuff that other than the probiotics. Where is that? Is she even on probiotics? I don't see those listed. But not really addressing the gut per se directly, not addressing the fat absorption at all. So she might be looking at getting some help with the fat absorption by trying some bile salts. You got to be careful with that, because if you're not careful with the dose, you can cause dumping and then they get diarrhea from it. That's one thing. But certain herbs to support the liver, cholagogue type herbs to make the bile move, could be very helpful. And that's usually where I start too. Having bitters with her meals can help to have a cholagogue effect. And then if you go into the program we haven't done the liver one. If you go into the grand program, the liver section, we have a list of different cholagogue herbs. And cholagogue herbs have helped to move things along. And you can read the indications for the different ones to see which ones might work. Wow. Vanessa said, Young Living Super B has folic acid. Uh-oh. So that would be something I would get her off of and get her onto a different B that has methylated folate in it, as opposed to, and it would be an L-methylfolate as opposed to folic acid, because with an MTHFR, she should not be taking folic acid. Good catch, Vanessa. Thank you. So, you know, I would really get the diet diary to see, because she's still eating corn tortilla chips. Which tortilla chips would have, usually they're fried and they've got some sort of oxidized oil, which is not good if she's having trouble with her gallbladder. She's having maple syrup in her shake, which could be feeding gut bugs. And if she's making gluten-free chocolate chip cookies, there's certainly a sugar in there. So her diet isn't as clean as she makes it out to be. Okay, that the healthiest foods are the green juice, bone broth, soups, and organic vegetables. So she's continuing to eat the bone broth in spite of the fact that it causes the bloating and gas. The bloating and gas in the bone broth, where the bone broth is not so heavy fat, makes me suspicious that there is some kind of FODMAP and there might be some SIBO going on here. She doesn't drink. She doesn't do caffeine. She does filtered water. She doesn't even eat out, because she gets sick when she eats out. She doesn't eat any nuts and seeds. So my concerns too would be her fatty acids are out of balance, that she's not getting enough of those fatty acids. So I would make sure that if she tolerates it, that she's taken some sort of a fatty acid supplement, since she's not really getting it from food. And that could be an algae-based or fish-based omega-3 EPA DHA. And that's going to help with inflammatory. So hopefully you're writing this stuff down as I say it, Michelle, or you'll listen back, because I'm not writing it down. I'm focusing here. And so if you ask me, what did I just say? I may not remember what I just said, because I'm letting it come through. Yeah. And Jamie, you're totally right. That's what I was saying before also about the COMT. You never know when you give folate. So when we did our folate presentation the other day, you noticed that one of the sections of folate is glutamate, and so it can be excitatory if a person has anxiety. So that might, being careful with that might be a good idea. So there you go. But very low doses, but get her off the folic acid for sure. Yeah, so the bone broth is definitely a FODMAP. The bone broth is definitely a FODMAP, and so, you know, things like avocados and other foods. So one of the things you want to caution people is, if there's food that causes you gas and bloating, you've got to cut back on it, and then you have to figure out how do you do it without the gas getting the gas and bloating. Like we said before, the bile acids could help, and some cholagogue herbs could help as well. Oh, the beat. Yeah, you haven't seen the folate. Well, I recorded the folate the other day, and then I redid some of the sections of it yesterday, so it should be up early next week. It's a long one. It's like an hour and a half long. She uses Summerbox bitters spray, but that seems to bother her too. Like, what bother? Does it mean it burns her? Does it cause gas and bloating? That's what I would want to do. MMC. Why am I drawing a blank on MMC? Remind me, refresh me. I'm going blank on the acronym MMC. I have a question about gas and bloating with SIBO. Okay, hold that question for later, Laura, so we can get through this, and then we'll answer it at the end. Oh, the migrating motor complex, of course. Yeah. So the migrating motor complex. Well, look, she's stressed, right? Her vagus nerve is probably not working properly. So her MMC, I would ask, how often is she eating? Like, is she allowing the 4 to 6 hours between meals, which is important for helping things to move through? So we'll summarize at the end some of these things. Thank you. I'm like, MMC, I know what that is, but I'm not remembering. And she does yoga once a week. So, and what is this that she wants out of the first? She wants a new path, a new insight. I want to be able to eat normal diet, healthy diet without problems, including healthy fats. Okay. So Michelle said she did do bile salts, Cholagogue product. I'm asking her now why she stopped it. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes people get diarrhea from it, and that's why they stop it. All right, so let's take a quick look at some of her assessments, and then let's see, what time is it, 2:30? Yeah, let's take a quick look at her assessments, and then we'll come back and pull it all together. That'll give you time to think about it while we have a break, and then you can switch gears also and fill out your other form. So the questionnaires that she did, and we have these available. So for those of you who are working with people, use these digestion questionnaires because it helps you identify which section of the gut is broken, basically. So it's called the Digestion Assessment Scorecard, and it has multiple sections. So the other question we had her do is Candida and Gut Dysbiosis Assessment, and then there was a leaky gut. So here's some of the scores. So basically, she subtotaled them. So 6 out of 54, 2 out of 21, 15 out of 78, 17 out of 18, 22 out of 93, and 21 out of 211 for the Candida. So you can see there's not a lot of issues, and I don't know how she got away with this score. We're going to have to look at this more carefully, because there's a question about how often you've taken antibiotics, and you get a score of 25 when you've taken antibiotics. So I want to look back at that questionnaire for her, because I have a feeling she didn't fill it out right. Now, having gone through the whole history, there's no way she could have just a 20 on that total. So that might have been just the sum of that she got. So we'll look back at that one. So let's look at some of these scores. When we take these scores, like, you know, 6 out of 54, that's like a ninth. So it's a small amount. 2 out of 21 is only a tenth. So really, the stomach is not showing a lot of dysfunction, not a lot of positive answers. But if you look at the small intestine, 15 out of 78, there's more, you know, 17 out of 81, so the intestines, but really look at 22 out of 92 is the largest one of all. So what we do is, and then there was the leaky gut assessment, which she had a score of 6 to 20. So we, with this, it's close, as close to zero as you can get as possible. So it's definitely signs of leaky gut. So that's an issue that she needs to be dealing with. If we look at the others, though, we put them on the scorecard. This is what I showed you earlier. This is goes by percent, and we want it to be less than 10%. So we do 6 over 54 is 11%. 2 out of 21 is 9%. So there's some symptoms there, but not huge amounts. It's not where I would go first. Doesn't mean there still can't be some H. pylori going on there. The pancreas small intestine is 19%. The large intestine is 21%, the liver gallbladder is 24%. So you could see these two elimination areas are the highest scores. The candida is low, but I think that is a problem, and I'll look at that when we do our break, just to see. Okay, so this is how we would use this chart, and I'm not saying this is where we're going to go necessarily with this person. We'll customize it a little bit more, but what we do is say her major issues are large intestine, liver, gallbladder, and then we come down here and we want to see which are the primary things. Well, with liver, gallbladder, HCL, bitters, and enzymes are really important. with the large intestine, it could be the antispasmodic herbs, but also the probiotics. So cholagogues with the liver gallbladder. So this gives you an idea of like at least giving you a starting point if you're not, when you're not right, quite comfortable with dealing it with yourself. So before we go into the rest of her tests, I would like us to take a break. Actually, here's her stress profile, and she's got a super high cortisol in the morning, like super high compared to everything else, and then she's flatlined the rest of the day. So she's got something that's at night, and maybe she's not sleeping well, or maybe she's got a parasite, which is waking her up and giving her stress in the middle of the night, or maybe some of these traumas are things that start to fester in her sleep and get her awakening in the night so that level is really high in the morning. So with that, I'll go back and answer whatever questions or comments are there, and then we'll take a break for about a half an hour to give you guys a chance to, relax and let this thing simmer and then work on your programs. And we'll come back to that towards the end. So take the worksheet that's sitting on the side, and then print it out and just start working on that and just do a little bit of that. Also, get outside. I'm going to go outside. It's nice and sunny out there. I'm going to go outside and get a little sun, walk around, get a little water, and go for it. Lynn is too fast for me, Jamie said. Yeah, Lynn, I don't know how she finds links so fast. She's amazing. So let's just see. Ah, here's Michelle. She said she stopped the bile salts because her symptoms stopped. I really want to talk about this. We'll talk about more when we come back. What does that mean? If she was taking the bile salts and it worked, and then you stop and then the symptoms come back, it means you go back and you take it. Does that mean she now can eat fat without taking the bile salts? So those are questions to ask, right? A lot of times that's what happens with people. They try something, they get a good result, they stop it, and then they go back to having the bad results again. So, good. Jamie said, this just topped on my timeline related to digestion, a new book by Aristo Vojani, Neuroimmunity and the Gut Brain Health. This guy is amazing. Aristo Vojani is totally amazing. So I want to take a look at that. Thank you, Jamie. Tony said, taking a walk. Yes. So not going outside here, but looking at a sun which just popped out. 8:40 p.m. here in Portugal. Woohoo! So no sun there for you, Jamie. So she's saying that she just started getting the bloating and indigestion again a month ago. I think when she was doing the program, her diet was really clean. Yeah, you need to get a complete diet diary for her, because it sounds like she's a stop-start person. It sounds like she tries something for a while, it seems to work or not work, and then she tries something else. So she needs to do some consistency. Are you going to share the labs on Join Me after the break? I don't have to share the labs on Join Me because I've put them onto the slides. It's easier. So a month ago, she started eating more bone broth after doing Summer's program, and now she says she's not digesting well again. And she's not taking the bile salts, right? So we got to get her consistent. I think she's going to get some results if we can get her to be consistent and be consistent with stress breaks. Be consistent with tapping in the morning or heart math throughout the day. And we'll talk about that and ask her about that. Does she do any breathing and appreciation before her meals? Does she eat her meals on the run? All these are really important questions. Let's see. I felt better, so I stopped taking it. Now I'm sick again and I don't know why. That's very common, Steph. We see it all the time. Michelle said, it makes sense if she has FODMAPs that she improved with Summer's program because she was off the bone broth. But that inconsistently speaks to her mindset. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a lot here. We're all learning a lot from this. Michelle said, yes, you're right. She jumps around a lot trying different things because she feels nothing is helping her. But wait a minute. What do you mean nothing's helping her? She went on the bile salts and she felt better. So then she felt better with Summer's program. And then she went back to the things that were causing her a problem. And she's having a problem again. So it's really a matter of consistency. I'd also be examining with her that feeling, what she said at the end. I want to be able to eat normally. It's like, you know what? I want to be able to be healthy is a better approach, right? So there may be some food stuff going on there, like some anger and resentment that she doesn't get to eat all the foods that everybody else gets. So just a thought. And some self-sabotage. Yeah, I agree. And she has a lot of brain fog. Sure. Makes sense. Well, if you're stressed, you've got a lot of brain fog, and if you don't have adrenals. So Alma said, which part in the bone broth is the FODMAP? It's the collagen. The collagen is. it's exactly what you're eating it for is what the problem is if you have FODMAP problems. Yep, everybody gets that. There's lots of emotional stuff to address. Yeah, well, yeah, her young life was nothing consistent except pain, suffering, hospitalization, you know, low self-esteem, being made fun of. She's had a rough life. She's had a rough life. And so it's really being there to support her and helping her to let go of some of that stuff and be consistent with the habits. Really, really big time. Great. So if she was doing great on Summer's program, she needs to go back and stick with it until she's healed or until it's no longer helping. That's the thing that people do. Okay, I did this gluten-free diet for 2 years and now I feel better. Now I'm going back and eating bread. No, don't work that way. You know, sometimes we don't ever get to eat those foods again because of damage that's been done or some other issues that we haven't yet identified. Or you just don't eat them until you figured it out. I'd want to know, why is her gallbladder and liver a problem? Is it emotional? Is it related to a liver qi stagnation and things related to those, you know, those Chinese medicine principles based on her years and years of stress and probably lots of anger and resentment as a result? Yeah, she was doing great because she was avoiding the histamines. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and then there's getting the right bacteria in there, right? Because some of the bacteria will eat the histamines. And isn't it bifidus that eats the histamines? Muscle testing could be a great way to do it. Absolutely. Yeah, to determine if liver gallbladder is emotional. So let's take a break and let's all think about these things. And let's all come back. And if you've got some thoughts or ideas that you want to present here, present them, and then we'll wrap it up and summarize it. I'll show you some more of her labs, and we'll go deal with it. Steph says, deal with the gut bugs in the liver, see where she is, and then look at the immune system to look deeper at the histamines. So stay off of them for now. Deal with the other pieces. And plantarum. So plantarum and bifidus are going to help with the histamines. Right. This is right. Jamie said, one of the biggest mistakes I see with clients is that when they have HPA, you know, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal dysfunction and low energy, they don't allow their reserves to build back again and they use up the extra energy right away. So that's it. It's like kid in the candy store. The kid gets his allowance and suddenly, oh, I've got money now. I'm going to go to the candy store. I'm going to spend it. And then, oh, I don't have any money anymore. We don't allow it to build up. And I see it all the time with adrenals. Oh, I felt so good. I went for a 3-mile run. I'm like, honey, you should have gone for a 20-minute walk around the block and then come back. Reserve it. We need to reserve the energy for healing. And her adrenals are shot. She's got that spike in the morning that's a sympathetic response to something, I believe. And the rest of the day, she's shot. And because she's spiking like that in the morning, she's using up her reserves. So we need to, you know, eventually figure out what's going on to cause that. But what can you do to bring that down? You know, heart math would be awesome to do for that. And Sequoia said muscle testing is effective if you prioritize and ask the right questions. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so break. It's 2:47. Let's come back at 3:15 and whatever time that is in your zone. So 3:15 my time would be 4:15 on the east and 1:15 on the west, and who knows when in Portugal where Jamie is, and I don't see Allison on, so it's I don't know where she is. So that should cover your time zones, and we'll talk to you guys in a little bit. Have fun. Hello and welcome back to the next part of our case studies call on our virtual retreat for clinical assessment of the digestive tract. And as you recall, we were in the middle of doing a case that Michelle submitted, a pretty challenging case of a woman who's, you know, been doing a lot of stuff to try to help her health. But we really see there's a lot of background, a lot of baggage that she's bringing to the table, a lot of stress, a lot of issues that could be affecting her now. And we were just getting to the point of discussing, you know, maybe some of the underlying things, possibly some emotional things that are affecting her liver and her kidneys, and just this addiction to being busy and probably trying to cover up some old wounds. It's something she learned to do, to distract herself from the pain that she was going through consistently. So Lynn says busyness is a distraction method, and it definitely is, for sure. So let me go through some of the others. Let me just clarify on her candida test, which I showed you the sheet a minute ago. It was not actually 20. It was on, it was like 97 or something like that, 82. I can't remember the exact number. So I misread it. I didn't catch all the pages. So she definitely has indications that there's a candida or a dysbiosis, kind of an overgrowth happening, which we were discussing earlier, which would reinforce the idea for getting one of the tests. So the question is really just determining which of those two stool tests would be a better approach for her, whether it would be good to go with the BioHealth 401H, which just does some parasitology and some bacteriology. It doesn't do as broad a spectrum of organisms and doesn't give us the details about undigested fat in her stools and inflammatory markers and some of the other things that the doctor's data. So I'm kind of leaning towards the doctor's data, just because I don't see H. pylori as high on the list of suspects as I do the SIBO and the gut not functioning properly. So that's where I'm leaning towards, is recommending that you have her do the doctor's data comprehensive with the parasitology times 3, and then also for do the oat test. Jamie asked, what are my thoughts on PCR stool testing? You know, I think that's the one that Metametrics was doing before Genova took over, and I was not happy with it. I felt like all I kept getting was yeast overgrowth, taxonomy unknown, or parasite taxonomy unknown, and I never got really good data from it. So I switched from doing that to doing the regular, looking for the microbes in the stool versus looking for their DNA. And I feel like I get better results that way. And there may be cases like you could do both of it. I know Amy Asco recommends doing it all. You know, you do it once and then you do the next time you do another, and you just do it in the different compartments in different ways, which makes a lot of sense too. Yeah. Well, let's take a look at some of her other findings. So we looked at her overall adrenal, and that's beyond the scope of this particular class, but it plays in very importantly, is that when you look at her numbers, I'll just do a brief overview. Her total cortisols are within their normal range, but her DHA is super low and her cortisol DHA ratio is super high. So that's suggestive of a stage 2 adrenal fatigue. But because I'm seeing that she's just so flatlined on all of the points except that first, I think it's really a stage 3 with there's some reserves there that's causing her to be able to have a sympathetic spike in the morning. But I think she's really depleted is what I'm thinking. She also had some of her other test results back, and this is why I think she's really depleted as well, because all of her female hormones are low. So her estriol is, 3.1 with a range of, 2 to 98. So she's really low there. Her progesterone is low. It's 123. And you didn't say whether she's postmenopausal or if she's still cycling. 123, if she's still cycling, is very low. And then her melatonin is high, which is kind of unusual. So I don't know if she's taking any melatonin, if she's having difficulty sleeping and then taking melatonin. It's not a high to be concerned about. It's just curious, because you don't usually see that unless somebody is taking. And her testosterone is very low for females. So all of these are the same precursors as the adrenals. So her adrenals are actually affecting her sex hormones as well. Here's some other labs that she got. This is her thyroid panel. Her TSH is 4, so it's slightly high. And her free T4 is 0.6, so it's very low. And they didn't do a free T3, so it's a very incomplete thyroid panel. And what this would say is that if she's on like a Nature Throid, that we know that her dose is probably too low. But we also know that the T3 is important too, because that's what really the cells see, and that stress affects the T4 to T3 conversion. So the T3 has to be low because the T4 is, unless there's some weird like testosterone excess or something, which we don't see. We just looked at that. So in this particular case, I'd say we can't really tell what the conversion is just because we don't have the T3. But the other piece you want to look at with the thyroid, even if it was perfectly balanced, is thyroid receptor resistance, which is extremely common in prolonged stress. It's also common in elevated homocysteine, which her MTHFR is the 1298C, which is not usually associated with high homocysteine. But if you have somebody that has an MTHFR and they're having thyroid symptoms, it could be the homocysteine is actually disrupting the receptors. Vitamin A deficiency as well, that can be affecting it as well. The receptors and, of course, stress, cytokines and stuff like that. And she doesn't take melatonin. Okay. Does she sleep well, Michelle? All right. So this is another test, which I don't think is significant right here, although it says she's on borderline for osteoporosis, which would go back to digestion and not really being able to absorb her minerals if indeed she's getting enough of them. So it's either intake, the amounts that she's taking. So I'd be looking at her minerals. I'd be looking at her acid-alkaline balance. Because when you're getting to an acidic residue, you're going to be excreting your calcium, magnesium. You know, maybe getting her on some good liquid minerals, like a liquid light from Sun Warrior or something like that, which is just a broad spectrum, and it's in an ionic form, so they're easily absorbed, even in a disrupted gut situation. So that's all the tests we had for her. So she said she has good nights and bad nights for sleep. So, yeah, you want to address rebuilding her adrenals, but you also want to address replenishing her adrenals. So the fact that she got the HeartMath device, I think, is awesome. And I think really encouraging her, if this is someone you actually get to see, you can sit with her, you can walk her through it, you can really help her. A lot of times what I find with folks who are so strung out like that, you try to guide them through the breathing, and they like half breathe and go, okay, I'm done, let's move on. Because there's just, that's the way they are. And you can tell by the way she filled out her form that she's hypervigilant, as I would call it. She's just like wants to get it right, wants to get everything in there, and likes to, you know, is no problem with reliving all these different situations. And when you're willing, able, and you do retell a lot of those situations, you relive them, and you relive them in your nervous system, and it causes that sympathetic response. And I'm not saying that that's what she's doing, because we specifically asked her for all that information, but if she tends to be the type that tends to dwell on the things that are wrong with her and always be talking about them and wondering when it's going to get better and lamenting the fact that she's doing so much and she's not getting better, then that's a part of the problem. And as we said before the break, it looks like she starts stuff and then she stops it. So she started stuff, she was doing really well with the Summer Bach thing, and then she went back on the bone broth and stopped the bile acids and the cholagogues. So it's really an important thing to have her be consistent and to do some testing, have her be consistent with a protocol, and then retest. Even if the retesting is just redoing some of her numbers to see if they get better. But really important, if she's got stuff that's causing her problems, she needs to be off of it. And sometimes it's a long time before she heals it. And if the problem is as a result of there being out of balance gut bugs and she doesn't address that, then the problem isn't going to get better. It's just going to temporarily be better while she avoids things, which is good, which allows healing. But if she continues to eat foods that cause her symptoms, the healing isn't going to happen. So that's really, really important. Yeah. Michelle says she talks a lot about what's not working and focusing on that instead of where she wants to be. And that's going to prevent her healing. And she needs to get that across to her in a very gentle, kind way and tell her how important it is for her nervous system to vision her being well, to trust the things that she's doing. Because when they have that attitude, like nothing works, they're going to try something with the attitude, well, this is probably not going to work either. Right? She was doing a lot of enemas, she feels better, then do them. Do the things that help her to feel better. Let her know you're working with her to help to get her to the underlying causes, which a lot of it is the stress. Recommend these tests and see if we can get at the heart of it. But the issue is, like, why is that gallbladder? Why is her liver gallbladder sluggish? She's eating a pretty pristine diet. And then you can support that with foods. Like, see if she tolerates things that really are nourishing to the liver and can have cholagogue effects, like dandelion, hawthorn berry tea, or hawthorn berries, just eating them and putting them on salads, burdock root. Like, there's a lot of really good things that she can do food-wise to support her liver. There's things that she can do to support her liver from the standpoint of improving detoxification, some of the things I just mentioned, but also something like milk thistle. She can get milk thistle seeds, since she likes to do food first, and grind them up and put them on salads and see how that does. And what she needs to do before she puts food in is take herself out of fear mode. Because this is what happens when people have all these problems with food. They go into fear mode before they eat, and then that puts them into sympathetic, and that they're not going to digest. So it's really having her learn what it feels like to be in that parasympathetic state via the HeartMath device, and then making sure that she takes a couple of minutes before she puts any food or supplements into her body to allow that to happen. teach her some of the vagal nerve things that we learned. She was there. You said she was there at Shine. So teach her some of that vagus nerve stuff, or a reminder of the vagus nerve stuff, because that's really important for the migrating motor complex we were talking about before, but also for relaxing that whole digestive tract and activating the vagus nerve to stimulate improved digestion. And there's been studies that show that activation of the vagus nerve improves all the secretions of the digestive tract. If she tried bitters, but it didn't go well with the ones from summer, try a different brand, right? There's more than one ways to skin a cat, they say, and there's more than one kinds of bitters. There's more than one kind of herb. So I would try something different and just get her to be consistent with something for a length of time so you can evaluate pre and post. Use those questionnaires to go, okay, let's see, we're going to do some stuff to help your gallbladder, liver. Let's just do this test again after we've been doing it for 2 months. So anything else that anybody else has to add to that for Michelle? We'll save this chat log because there was a lot of great things in it. You asked a question about should she be taking pregnenolone and DHEA. I mean, yeah, you could address it that way, but you've got to address it from the underlying, right? You've got to address it from before that. Licorice, sure, I think she would do well, just, and that would be helpful for her gut as a demulcent. Just make sure that it doesn't overstimulate her. Just go slowly with drops. I'd be careful with doing any of the, she's very sensitive, I'd be careful with doing pregnenolone or DHEA with her. I might start with more of the, like an ashwagandha, which is gentle, and it affects the thyroid as well, and also can have some liver issue, you know, liver support properties. So I would look at some of those things to help her, and some of the calming adaptogens, even though her numbers aren't high at bedtime, they're actually high compared to everything else because they're normal at bedtime, right? And so I would be looking at ways to calm her down, like first thing in the morning, maybe have her have a cup of chamomile tea or some lemon balm, get a lemon balm plant and keep it by her bedside, and before she gets out, grab one of the leaves and squeeze it between the fingers to try to get that aroma. Do some of her aromatherapy. She likes that. So in her bedroom in the morning, have her have on some of the Serenity compounds or things like that to really help her. Let's see. Do the bile salts and bitters do the same thing, or could she use these together? The bile salts are going to stimulate, they're bile salts, so they're going to help when your body doesn't make enough, which helps to emulsify the fats. So go back to the modules and really learn about those. And bitters can help to move the bile along, absolutely. So you could start with bitters and see how she does. If she doesn't tolerate them, then try the bile salts. Since she already knows she did well on those bile salts from standard process, why muck with success? Have her go back on that. Jamie said, with all her emotional issues and wanting to constantly cleanse, she's likely in a constant catabolic state, which will hinder the detox pathways. Right. Often people make the mistake of thinking detox is about removing rather than remineralizing and giving it the nutrients. Absolutely. So I thought the mineralization, maybe look and see. She's doing about a teaspoon a day of that protein powder from Summer Bach. Have her continue that, and maybe she can increase it. That doesn't sound like a whole lot. To help her get more of the whole minerals. She tolerates something like spirulina, a good source of protein. When people are trying to detox or rebuild their gut, they need more protein. And so it's sometimes more protein than would be good to take as a whole food when the stomach is impaired and the gut is impaired. So using some of those protein powders as a crutch can be helpful for a while. I would say I wouldn't do the DHEA at all right now. I would do some of these other things first and wait on the DHEA. Just because she's so sensitive, I would want to do some of the other stuff and then maybe see how she does with the DHEA. When I do the DHEA, I usually do the one from Biomatrix because it's sublingual and you can control it. And it's very small dose, you know, with her. Because of the cortisol being so low most of the day, I would be careful. I would probably favor having DHEA in the morning, because it can help bring the cortisol down and then supply the DHEA. But later in the day, I'd be careful because the DHEA could inhibit the cortisol even further. Dr. Karazian mentioned in his SIBO interview gargling with large amounts of water to the point of tears by doing 3 large glasses a day. That's a lot. Yeah, I thought this was interesting. I was gargling in the morning and evening, but not that much, and have increased it. So yeah, and that gargling will stimulate the vagus nerve. So have her do that. That sounds great. Gargling to the point of tears, it doesn't sound like fun. It's hard to get good compliance with it. But 3 large glasses a day throughout the day, wow. and singing. Yeah, singing in the shower, singing wherever, singing loudly is what really helps with that vagus nerve as well. Lynn says humming. I know we spoke about this at Shine. I think Steph talked about it too. Michelle says she does not do well in purging powders at all. Okay, so have her look into something like a spirulina, which is a good source. And Health Force has one called Elite Green Protein. Elite Green Protein is a good one because it's all green and it's got about 16 grams of protein. So play with that because she needs it, right? She definitely needs it. Okay? Any more questions about that one before we go to the next case? Great. So that's why I said she did well on Summer's protein powder. Have her see if she can increase it a little. Find out how much is in that teaspoon she's taking. My guess is a teaspoon maybe has 6 or 7 grams, right? So just, yeah, go ahead and have her just test, like, have a teaspoon and a half of it. Just go real slowly. It's great that, and I'd like to know what it is, like, what it is she didn't tolerate versus what she did tolerate, because that gives you more clues. The Donna Gates fermented protein powder has a lot of other stuff in it, so it's certainly something to try, but it is a complicated one. So I'd like to know what Summer's is by comparison, because it's got the mushrooms and it's got kale and, you know, it's got all kinds of stuff in it. It's very good, and pea, but it also, you know, it's just something to try, certainly. But if she found one that already works for her, I would stick with that one and just work with the dose. Okay, so you're very welcome. Everybody's given you lots of great ideas, so feel free to go, you know, play it over again. Yeah, and play it over again and get more gists out of it. Michelle says she doesn't seem to do well on things that are combined. That was the feeling I was getting, so simple. Like, she doesn't do well on the Mighty Maca. And yoga, of course, yoga, tapping, heart math, anything you can do to get her to change. But it's a belief thing too. It's really a belief thing. And there's a fear of letting go. There's a fear of letting go of some of that stuff. And like you said, she's always focusing on talking about what things haven't worked. Switch her. Let's talk about what things have worked. Let's give your subconscious the message that we can heal. It's just a matter of getting the right combination. And a lot of stuff has worked. It's just a matter of putting it all together. So, all right. Thank you very much. And we'll move on to Tiffany's case. Tiffany's is a totally different. Tiffany's is a 15-year-old female. We have very little on her. Hers is in that packet as well. It's the second one. We don't have very much. But the information I have on her is that she has a history of seizures. She's 15. The seizures started about 3 years ago. She had one seizure and then a while later, I think it was a year or two later, she had two more seizures, so they put her on medication. She hasn't had a seizure in almost 2 years, but they wanted her to be off of, they don't want to take her off the medication until she's been 2.5 or 3 years is what I got from reading it. I have to pull it up again, make sure I didn't miss anything. And I get that this is your daughter, Tiffany, is what I'm getting based on your notes. So here we go. Yeah, so chronic headaches. Yeah, so she had two seizures in 2013, the week of Thanksgiving, and the first one was 2.5 years before the other two. All the seizures occurred 3 to 4 days after a fever, and the fever each time, she had no symptoms with it. So, like, it wasn't like she had a virus or a flu or something and got a fever. It's just a fever of unknown origin. She was put on the medication then. She's now at the very lowest dose. She's been gluten-free for 2 years. And all grain-free, dairy-free, egg-free for 5 months. There's still an indication that she's developing new food sensitivities. So she said that maybe carrots and sweet potatoes are bothering her with loose bowels. And other than the occasional loose bowels and beside the headache, she only has some belching after meals, but not due to eating too fast. Occasional red cheeks she gets when she's having a reaction. So that sounds like a histamine reaction. And she may have some environmental sensitivities as well. The digestive enzymes don't help with the belching. No bloating, but occasional gas in the form of passing it. She's lost 20 pounds. So she has 20 more to go. And she's doing a leaky gut supplement from Josh Axe's website. Her super healthy diet consists of fresh organic veggies and fruits. It's not vegetarian or vegan. When she does eat meat, it's only grass-fed, pasture-raised. She's taken supplements, digestive enzymes. She doesn't mention what supplements. Probiotics, prebiotics, fermented foods when she'll eat them. It's the thing with a 15-year-old. It's really hard. She's not fond of most fermented foods. I don't know if you've tried any kefir. Coconut kefir could be a good one for people who don't like the sauerkraut. She's taken turmeric, biotin, multivitamin, and a leaky gut supplement from Axe Naturals. She takes half the adult dose. Lately, she's gotten out of the habit of taking it with all the meals. So things are working in some ways, but she still has those daily headaches. She had gained a lot of weight when her gut was so off, and now it's coming back. I know that it took years for her gut to get that bad of shape, and it'll take a while for her to get back in shape. But we do have to figure out why the headaches are still chronic. Before the chronic headaches, she would have hormonal and bariatric pressure migraine. I would ask you about her periods. It doesn't sound like they're cyclic, but it certainly can be an imbalance throughout the cycle that can contribute. It's just a thought to look for. Toxicity can do it. So I've put people on liver detoxes when they couldn't get rid of the headaches and the headaches go away. You know, it could certainly be a gut dysbiosis. But here's the thing. She has two points on her back near her shoulder blades that she noticed last month. And when she rubbed them, the headache disappears or dissipates. Once the rubbing stops, the headache comes back. So, Tiffany, if you're on, you know, just write in and tell me where exactly they're located. Are they the lower part of the shoulder blade, the upper part, right or left, or either? Because referral from a gallbladder or liver can be to the right or a shoulder. Let's see. And then there looks like Jamie had something to say. Let me finish this and then we'll look. So it only gets rubs once a day instead of three times due to schedule. She does other exercises on her own that the doctor recommended, the chiropractor. I suspected the seizure med may be causing the chronic. So I would say, have you looked up that medication to see what the side effects are? And if that is a common side effect, they want her to... Yeah, so it's 3 years they want her to be seizure-free. So this coming November, hopefully. And hopefully with all these changes that you've made with her, Tiffany, that she will be able to get off of them, right? Before, you hadn't really made all these dietary changes to help her balance. So she may be seizure-free for that year and can get off of it. And again, you have to make your own decision about whether you think, you know, she could try it or not and discuss it with the doctor. So the blood tests, we'll look at some of the blood tests. The blood tests showed that she had some elevations of some of the inflammatory markers. So here's her CRP is 9.3. So there's definitely inflammation happening in her body. Her white blood cells are high. So that says to me that there's an infection going on somewhere. Her MCV is low, like super low, like 77. And her iron is super low. So she does have iron deficiency anemia. And I don't know if you're addressing that. Her neutrophils, oh, you have absolute. Do you have the percentages? Neutrophils low and lymphocytes high are generally related to a viral type infection. So I'd be looking at, did she have any mono? Very common when kids become teenagers, they get mono. So mono would be one thing to look at, EBD of some sort. And hepatitis, is there any way she could have gotten hepatitis? Let's see. Her ferritin is low. Her vitamin D is super low. And I don't know if you're supplementing her with vitamin D, but she definitely has to look. You have to get that vitamin D up. So I would be upping her vitamin D. I think you might have said she had 5,000, but I don't remember. But up her vitamin D to bring that up. Her glucose is on the high side. Why does it say low? That's not low. That's on the high side. 93 is high. The serum B12s and folates are not all that meaningful. They're normal, but they're not meaningful. Her monocytes are low. There we go. There's the neutrophils. Yeah, so neutrophils are 36%, and they should be more like, you know, 60 to 70. So I think there's a viral infection here somewhere. And she's got normal homocysteine. They did test her for Bartonella. A bunch of different strains, and all the IgGs, GMs came out negative. And then her celiac came out negative, but I think it was a little further down that there was some transglutaminase. But she's off of the gluten. The celiac test isn't sensitive for gluten sensitivity. Why are you thinking cryptopyrroles, Jamie? You know, I think of cryptopyrroles when there's a lot of anxiety. It's possible that the headaches could be related. Explain more about the heavy metals testing to check for copper and heavy metals. So tell me more about that. What are you thinking there? Let's see. Okay. Just going back with the headaches, history of the headaches is the history of the headaches. You know, if the history of the headaches was after she started on this medication, I would certainly use that as a suspect. It's got to be brutal to be having daily headaches like that. Good point. The Lyme test didn't go into the specific band, so she had a Western blot. That's a possibility. Can heavy metals displace iron, or can they just move in when iron is low? I thought that it was the latter, but can you clarify? I don't know that heavy metals will displace iron, but she certainly has low iron. Let me go back to see what you're supplementing her. Here, I have it written here. So she's taking digestive enzymes, probiotics, prebiotics, turmeric, biotin, a multivitamin, a leaky gut supplement. And that's it. So I don't even see that she's taking vitamin D. So she definitely needs to be taking D. I would look at helping her iron. One of my favorite ways is Yellow Doc, the herb Yellow Doc. So you want to look at that. Yeah, so the heavy metal, okay, got it. So Jamie's looking at maybe getting a hair heavy metal test to see if there's mercury, aluminum, copper, any of those toxic metals that could be affecting her brain. Any exposures, that's the other thing I'd be looking at. What kind of exposures? What was happening right before? She had a fever and nothing else. And oftentimes that can be a viral thing. I mean, that's why I'm looking towards a viral thing because of the numbers. So I would really be looking at doing some other viral screening. You know, you can do testing for hepatitis. You can do testing for EBV. That's a biggie. And then the heavy metals is a good idea. So copper can antagonize iron. Okay. And Laura said she could have an underlying Marcon's infection. That could be contributed to the headaches. Could you explain to people what that is? Yeah. So these are some ideas. So the summary would be I would get her on some vitamin D and then do a heavy metal test and consider getting on some support for the iron for now. For example, I would look at her the multivitamin that she's taking too, to see what doses and what comparisons they have between zinc and copper. Yeah, and her MCV was low, so we don't, you know, it could be that her, she could also have an underlying B12 folate, and we wouldn't know because the MCV is low because of the iron being low. Although with that number, it's probably purely the iron deficiency. So definitely iron deficiency that has to be addressed. Okay, so I would look at the iron. I would look at the vitamin D, do some extra testing. Okay, so Laura says multiple antibiotic-resistant coagulase-negative streptococci is an antibiotic-resistant staph infection that resides deep in the nose. Yeah, and again, it's certainly a possibility, but given the numbers here, I'm leaning more towards it being a viral infection, that there's some kind of chronic viral thing that's happening here. You know, I would look back in her history. We don't have enough of her back history to know what kind of things were happening that led up to it. And, you know, what kind of her history was as a kid, you know, as a baby, illnesses, exposures, things like that. Let's see if Tiffany's on the phone. Tiffany, if you're on the phone, raise your hand.
All right. So go ahead, Tiffany. Hi.
Hey.
So is this your daughter? I'm assuming it's your daughter.
It is my daughter.
Wow. So what was happening before the first seizures? What was her health like before that?
Really good. I mean, she's been a very healthy child all along. She's homeschooled, so we eat healthy. We're a homeschool family that does what we need to do.
Right. So, and she's not exposed to a lot of other – so she didn't have, like, anything you know of, like a mono or something like that could
No. And what was so weird was those viruses, like I said, just fever. It was about 101 to 102. She would have it for like 3 or 4 days. And then that first seizure, she was acting really strangely. Her eyes would kind of flutter every once in a while, and she kind of be kind of dazed, and that happened for several days until the seizure. But the other two seizures, the seizure happened 3 to 4 days after the last day of the fever and the fever was 3 or 4 days in a period, but no other symptoms, just a fever.
Wow.
And the neurologist was like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, not, well, fever that high, you know, typically seizures come with 100 and 405, especially
exactly.
in a young child. So it's clearly a viral, and I'm thinking some kind of encephalitis, you know, some kind of virus that's affecting her brain or her meninges, her nervous system.
Okay.
I don't know how to test for that, but I mean, the numbers look viral. The CBC numbers look viral.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Usually in a bacterial infection, you're going to see high neutrophils. And it's there. It's not like it's an old, you know, her body's still having an immune response because her white blood cells are high.
Yes.
You know, and you don't want to do anything invasive like a spinal tap or whatever, especially since she hasn't had a seizure in 2.5 years. And you've gotten her off the gluten and the allergens and are working on her gut and overall. And hopefully that's going to go away. But it's the headaches that – did you look up the medication to see if
yes,
that was
– and it – that is a side effect on and both. The one she's on now and the one she was on previously that we took her off of, they both have, you know, that's as a side effect, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And her, when she, so she got on the medication in November of 2014, and so January of 2015 is when the chronic headaches started. And last year, you know, in Texas, it was front after front after front. It was a weird winter. And so that whole period, I thought, oh, it's just barometric pressure headaches. But then once comes April and May and we're not seeing all those weird fronts come in, and I was like, oh, something's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's when I took her to so many different specialists all summer long and fall, and has been a whirlwind.
And are this, the headaches sharp or are they dull?
They're on a scale of 1 to 10, they stay about at 3 and 4.
Okay.
And when she moves around some days, it's a pounding and it's a 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it aggravated by jumping and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And it does get worse if the barometric pressure is different or if she's on her period. They get worse. They get, you know, more of a pounding when she moves around. And she's more sensitive to light during those two times, you know, or those two issues.
Does it get worse when she leans down, like if she leans down to tie her shoes or something
yes.
like that?
Yes.
It does. Well, that tends to push towards something in the sinuses as well, which is what...
And sometimes she does notice that she has some sinus issues, but not all the time, which is... strange to me too. I thought maybe it's sinuses, but she only does it every once in a while. You know, she'll notice, gosh, I've got, you know, a lot going on in my sinuses, or, you know, my head.
Well, it could be deep. It could be deep, and it's only coming out. She's noticing when it comes out.
Okay.
I mean, you could certainly have her have an MRI of her head and see. Have they done an MRI?
Yeah, they've done every time. They've done MRI and the EEGs and all that.
And they didn't see anything in the sinuses. They would have said if they saw something in the sinuses.
Right.
And they didn't see anything, any blood flow
no.
problems in the brain or...
Nothing. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
That's why it's so frustrating and so odd at times.
Well, you know, I had a long time ago when I was first in practice, actually, I had this woman who had headaches and she'd been trying everything and she'd had MRIs and she'd tried so many things. And it wasn't getting better. And we said, well, maybe it's a detox. Maybe it's a cleanse headache. So we put her on like an ultra clear 5-day cleanse and got her on, you know, like just fruits and veggies and real simple diet. And her headaches went away.
Wow.
So, I mean, she's open to something like that where you just clear out everything, like clear out all the foods and you put her on a medical food powder like that.
Okay.
You just do it for 5 days and it's covered. It has all its nutrients. I like MediClear is the one that I would go with.
Okay.
And just try it. I mean, she's homeschooled. She doesn't have to go to school. She can control
exactly.
it. And it's certainly worth a try. And, it, you know, she'll drop a few pounds and it might help to clear some things out. It has a lot of anti-inflammatory stuff, so it could help with the inflammation. So there's clearly an inflammatory process going on.
Yes.
there's clearly something, and it's infectious. There's clearly an infectious thing based on the CBC.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of finding where they are. There are some antiviral, antimicrobial things that you could try too. You know, this is the not knowing, because you can't get in there and culture, and we don't know where it is. So how do you culture for it? And if it's viral, there's no culturing for it. It's just antibody.
Right.
So you could look at some really upping some of the antiviral protocols. I mean, some food-based or things like oregano and thyme oil, oregano and thyme. There's an herb called isatis that has some good antiviral properties. Garlic certainly has some good antiviral properties. But then if she
garlic all the time.
Yeah. Well, therapeutic doses, though. I mean,
yes.
You'd want therapeutic doses. As long as she tolerates it. If she gets gas and bloating from it, she may not tolerate sulfur. But as long as she tolerates the sulfur in it, it can be very good. I would look at, you know, even things like echinacea can be very good immune support. So really, I would work on, at this point, my tendency would be to work on the immune system. Jamie had some good points about the heavy metals. It could be heavy metals because they can affect the brain. Does mm-hmm. she have any exposures? Do you like, do you guys do clay or paints or anything like that, ceramics mm-hmm. that use lead-based paints or anything like that?
No, uh-uh.
Okay.
Her father used to a long time ago. He did pottery, but.
But not her. No exposures you can think of around there.
No. Now, I have always thought that this neighborhood could possibly have something going on. I conquered breast cancer in 2014, and two other of my neighbors have had cancer in a very small cul-de-sac. There's just five houses.
Wow.
Another gentleman on the other cul-de-sac, and then two others down just from us. And I was thinking over all the years that we've lived here, 20 years, that there's been about, that I know of, 23 cases, and we have about 230 homes in this neighborhood.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where do you
and
live?
Only two deaths in Mansfield, right outside of Arlington, Texas.
Okay. Yeah. So up by Dallas, New Dallas.
Yep.
Well, there might be something to that, environmental stuff. That, you know, there's a talk mm-hmm. screen that Great Plains just started to have. It's a talk screen that you can just do. It's, I think it's a urine talk screen, and they'll pick up if there's specific toxins that are.
Okay.
So you might want to look at that. And, you know, the heavy metal could be good. And certainly looking at an oat test, organic acid test, can be something that would give at least an overall look at her chemistry, like what's going on in her chemistry that may be happening. And she didn't have problems beforehand. She didn't have lots of headaches around her periods or anything like that beforehand, before
she did,
the procedure.
Once she, I guess it's, she was probably... She started when she was young. She started when she was 10, and then I think by 12 is when she started having the hormonal migraines.
Okay, so she did have hormonal migraines.
And we did biofeedback, and we did some other things, and tried, you know, natural supplements to help with that.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing really seemed to help, bless her heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it worse at certain times, like mid-cycle or at the end of the month, or is it pretty consistent, the headaches?
Now,
yeah,
it's consistent. It's just every day, 24 hours a day.
Before,
it was just when she was on her cycle, when she mm-hmm. was, you know, menstruating.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary's putting in that fracking around Mansfield happens.
Yes, that's true.
A lot of issues. And Lynn says there's a scorecard.goodguide.com. where you can go and look to see what environmental toxins. You might want to do a tox screen. You might want to do an organic acids if you really want to get at what's going on and, you know, what causes seizures. You know, there's some imbalances there. Mm-hmm. So those may pinpoint some issues that mm-hmm. you could address.
And it kills me. She's on this medication, the seizure medication. Oh, but, you know.
Well, how bad were they? Were they grand mal seizures?
Yeah.
Oh, scary.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Very.
Yeah. Anything else? What county? What county is it?
Tarrant.
Tarrant.
Mm-hmm. We're right on the borderline of Tarrant, Ellis, and Johnson County, actually.
Okay.
And there's a lot of trafficking and crap going on.
Yeah, Mary said they also had a lot of illegal dumping issues. So that would be a good thing. I mean, really anything you can do to build up her liver, too, could be very helpful. You know, really, I would be milk thistle's a good protectant. You know, and keeping her on a really clean diet. It's really hard with teenagers, I know, but a lot easier when you're homeschooling them.
Yeah,
they don't drive.
Good about whatever I say. Here, honey, try this. She'll do it. I mean, the only thing that she just, you know, it's like, about is the fermented food and the sauerkraut. She just
try
eats it.
Try some kefir. There's and you can get her some cavita. They're delicious. And
okay.
You know, some of the kefirs are really good. You can even make your own coconut kefir. Just get some coconut and blend it up, or put the cultures in. Go to Donna Gates' site. She'll teach you how to make coconut kefir. But Jamie makes a really good point. The hair heavy metal is a really good place to start because it's probably, I think it's $99 in the U.S., Jamie,
okay.
Is what we pay for it. So, yeah, and you can order it if you have an account with Doctor's Data, or you can go to my site. Just go in the VLM part of the site and you click on lab testing, and there's a hair heavy metal test in there. So that could be, it's always a good thing to rule out. If she's got those toxic metals, then there's ways to look at getting rid of it. But I'm really feeling really attached to the viral thing because it just feels like there's some kind of viral thing going on based on those numbers. The iron is low, so it does need to be brought up. You do have to get her on some vitamin D, and all of those things can help.
Yeah, she's got vitamin D supplements that she takes. And what's weird is on those tests, at one time it was low, and then several months later it's normal. It showed, and so I don't know what was going on with that. Yeah.
Huh. Without taking it, maybe it's exposure to the sun. So it's winter now, and it's as far as us Texans think, it's cold out. So.
Mm-hmm. And I try to get her out as much as I can, but then if her headache's so bad and the light kills her, she's like, I cannot go out there and sit in the sun for 15 minutes. I'm sorry, So. But I, I supplement.
Okay, yeah, so I would make sure she does that. And then the iron, I like yellow dot because it also is good for the liver.
Okay.
Did she have any rashes associated with these fevers that she had?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. Jamie's suggesting trace elements to use for the hair because they don't wash the hair sample, so look up trace elements and see if you can find a hair test by them.
Okay.
Yeah. And Jamie's going to do hopefully someday soon, we'll get Jamie to do a heavy metal hair test talk for us. Thanks for clarifying.
Got better now to do it. Jamie, hint, hint.
If you get on are you on the chat? Can you see the chat? Because if you get on the chat, there's Mary just put a link for... Not sure of the validity of it, but it's similar. And Lynn says in 2002, this county ranked among the dirtiest, worst 10% of all counties in the U.S. in terms of release of. So that makes sense that all these people are getting cancer. Yeah. Can you move?
Well, we really want to. Right now, my husband is out of work as of October. He got laid off from Oracle and looking for a job. And so... but for years I said, we just need to move. We've got to get out of here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Steph wants to say something, so I'm opening up her line. Hey, Steph.
Hey. I totally agree with everything and the oat test and the exposure urine test from Great Plains. I think that one's awesome. I just feel compelled to say something about the head MRI, and I couldn't make myself not say this. When I had my really bad jawbone infection and sinus infection, which had like no direct symptoms other than like headaches and ringing in the ears, I decided to go to this dentist and get this 3D x-ray, which is basically like an MRI, but you're in the room with them and you get to look at every single slide that they take. And so while some things might not seem important to somebody, it might seem, you might see something that, like, because I saw that and it was really obvious. Like, you could see the sinus infection was rampant in the, like, you could just look, you can see it. Just the bacterial overgrowth in the sinus cavity. And it was an expensive test. Like, it was $450 Canadian. Mm-hmm. But I just, like, I don't know, with the exchange, I just wanted to put it out there that, I mean, I know it's a trip, but people come to see this guy from all over the world. And I don't know if anybody ever feels like they have something in their sinus. I couldn't recommend it more.
So he's the only one that does this kind of 3D x-ray?
No, you can get them close to you. I'm sure of it.
Okay.
I just feel like it'd be cheaper to.
Oh, with the money. With the, with the,
that's
the,
like,
rate, the
yeah.
airfare with the, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost cheaper to just come here. But yeah, but so, yeah, you can get them. Seriously. I think the machines that they get are really expensive. So they charge pretty random amounts. So I don't know what they would cost close to you, but I know that this x-ray, 3D x-ray, was $450 or so Canadian.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that...
Yeah, that makes sense that if you're not looking for something like that, if you're just looking for, does she have anything in the brain that could have caused a seizure, but not necessarily looking in the sinus area or anywhere else in the area, then yeah, that makes total sense that they're not going to test that.
Yeah, and what they found on me was, like, my one tooth that I'd ever had a problem with had had an infection that had gone into the bone and then had eaten through into my sinuses. So there was, like, a whole bone infection and a whole sinus infection with, like, a biofilm and stuff. And I don't know if, I don't know, just if you do all this other stuff and you're still feeling, like, something about the head, I mean, it might be worth looking into.
Totally.
And Mary said it's good if you had the MRIs done that you actually get the pictures, get them to give them to you, because a lot of times, like we were just saying, that doctor doesn't consider it an issue. It might say, oh, there's a little mark there, but that's not going to cause her a seizure, so they just ignore it. So you might want to get the MRI pics and see if you can
get all of them from the past then. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, and see, you know, and, you know, maybe take it to somebody who's a little bit more... help you, we'd help you look for it better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, these are really good points. And Michelle says, wouldn't any dentist or oral surgeon be able to do this kind of x-ray? My kids had to have them done when they got their wisdom teeth out. Would it be the same kind of x-ray?
It's a pretty specialized x-ray.
Specialized
I think
x-ray.
This guy's the only guy in Canada that does it. And I don't know about the States. You guys probably have more, but yeah.
Okay. And Mary says she knows how to read brain MRIs. So are you offering help here, Mary? Because if she can get them, she can, you know, maybe you guys can chat about them and see if she can figure it out and see something in there. And then the what to do. So tell us more about what you did when you discovered this stuff, because that's the real kicker, right?
Well, so because I had the bone, there was the bone, and I know there's not a lot of circulation in the bone. I just had a chunk of my bone taken out. I had a tooth removed, the one tooth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I had a couple of kind of surgeries for that. And then I actually did, I realized that there's a biofilm in my sinus cavities. And for me, I think that's something I just need to keep constantly working on. And I put everything in my neti pot.
Tell us more. Do you do like the Serratia peptidase and things like that in the neti pot?
Yeah, so I don't recommend that because you can actually get a lot of pain. So Serratia peptidase and the neti pot, not so good. But other, like, antibacterial things, yes. And Serratia peptidase internally, so that it works on kind of all the systemic biofilms, I totally think is good. But, yeah, whatever you do, just make sure you put salt in it, too.
Right.
So it doesn't hurt.
Right.
But, yeah, I did manage to clear it quite a bit. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
I've been doing neti pot with xylitol along with my salts because xylitol is supposed to be a good antimicrobial for the up there, and it's very pleasant. It doesn't burn. I would not put grapefruit seed extract up there. I burned for 4 days after that. Oh my God, it was awful.
We should have a do and don't neti pot spreadsheet.
But I put on Vitamin C Works and you know, and it gets it up there, up into the cavity. So you could just start doing prophylactically doing some of those things. And, yeah.
I tried a few different varieties of the neti pot, and I have something called the nasaline, which is more like a syringe that you kind of put in your nostril and you get to stand
right.
up straight, and you can get some different angles because I had some stuff going on with those upper teeny sinuses where you can't
yeah.
really get to them. So, yeah, I found it easier with that thing.
Good.
It's called the nasaline. I don't know if that helps.
Nasaline, okay.
Yeah. Well, they have them. I don't know if it's the same thing. Oh, I have one right here. Is it? It's from Neil Med Sinus Rinse, and it's a bottle that you squeeze. And it has a.
It's not quite the same. I'll post the name of it. It's not quite the same because that one has a limited amount, and this one is. Yeah, I just like this one better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of ideas here, you know, and just
yeah.
ponder and sit with it and decide what feels like the next best step for you and your daughter
okay.
to do. There's a lot
yeah.
of possibilities here. Mary said she'll help you with the brain MRI.
That'd be great.
Sequoia said you can also get thermography, the type that does slices.
Okay.
I had a friend who had this and found the same jawbone infection Steph mentioned, and it was $260 in Canada. So that's another possibility. You can look into those things. So, yeah, I would look around. Any
so
other
awesome.
Last one?
This is an awesome
yeah.
group, isn't it? I love
yes.
this.
Yes, this is totally great. Oh, here's some that, oh, the neti wash. There's a neti wash
oh,
stuff.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Yeah, it has Chinese philodendron bark, golden seal, barberry, Chinese coptis. Coptis is a good so it's got a good combination of antimicrobials plus peppermint, eucalyptus. Menthol grapefruit seed extract, but it tastes okay as long as it's not pure grapefruit seed extract, I guess. Polysorbate 20 derived from coconut oil and a base of distilled water. So there's a lot of possibilities here. So just sit with it and, you know, reach out if you need help. And Mary said if you get the brain, the MRIs, she'll help you. So.
That'd be great, Mary. Thank you.
Okay. Great.
Wow. Thanks. I had no idea I'd get this much help. I love you guys.
Thank you for bringing
it
up.
It has been a journey, let me tell
oh,
you.
It's so hard to watch your own kids suffer and you just feel so helpless and
oh,
sounds
totally
like she's
helpless.
Been a good sport about it, you know.
Yes.
And
oh, totally. She's a sweetheart. But and to have coming, this is coming right off of my conquering cancer too, so
wow,
you know
yeah.
I got over it and then bam, right into her.
Yeah, you've got to move, guys. You've got to look into moving, really.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to move into moving. These are
yeah.
these are two wake-up calls.
Oh, totally. These are the signs.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll do it. You'll put it out there. You'll be positive. Your husband will get the best job in the world in some other totally part of the state and
right,
or part
exactly.
of the county or whatever.
We'll come
else.
Down to the hill country. We love that yeah, anyway.
Here.
We love Austin.
Yeah. It's great here.
Gorgeous there.
Yeah. All right. Well, you take care.
Thank you.
Bye,
thanks, Mary. Everyone.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks,
bye.
Steph. And thanks, everybody, Jamie and everybody else. You know, and that talk screen is a good idea. And it doesn't hurt to get the oat because that way you see what her chemistry is doing. So just,
okay.
you know, cover all bases and just really get to the heart of it and treat what you find rather than just kind of trying to guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
So our last one. See, we've gotten them in all different, you know, we've got a really wide range. We had a 53-year-old, we had a 15-year-old, now we have a 35-year-old. So she's a female, 5'8", 162. So she's been on a little overweight, and she has three problems. Oh, and this is from Patty. So is Patty on the call? Patty, raise your hand if you're on the call. So she has rheumatoid arthritis, lymphocytic colitis, and Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So if you recall, if you've watched it yet, the inflammatory bowel disease segment of the course, there was something on the different kinds of colitis. There was microscopic colitis, and lymphocytic was one of them. So it's kind of a microscopic colitis. So this person has rheumatoid arthritis, lymphocytic colitis, and thyroiditis. So what do you think is the theme between these three? What do they all have in common? I'll read them again. Inflammation. Thank you. Itis, inflammation. Yeah. So it could be leaky gut, the immune system, all that. But the itis, right? Itis is inflammation. So her joints are inflamed, her colon's inflamed, her thyroid's inflamed. There may be a gazillion other things that are inflamed, right? These are just the ones she knows about. So really the problem, we're not working here with rheumatoid arthritis. We're not working with a colon problem. We're not working with Hashimoto's. We're working with inflammation. Now, the question is, how do you then calm the inflammation in the different areas? So we'll see what Patty did with this. So surgeries, let's see, she has major complaints with the joints, gastrointestinal and weight, some issues with sleep, excessive sugar cravings. She did food sensitivity testing and found high allergies to numerous foods. When starting to see me, she was on the FODMAP diet and was having a lot of trouble, hoping that through working together, she could control pain and inflammation and lose weight. Also wants to take off the RA meds, and the RA meds are miserable. A lot of times they put people on methotrexate, which completely disrupts the folate metabolism, and any meds for colitis. So only surgery was for right elbow, so no big thing there, unlike our previous person, the first person, which did increase her mobility. Okay, so family history of autoimmune, very common to see that. Did a lot of yo-yo dieting when she was younger, moderate use of antibiotics as a child, had some problems with migraines when a child, did take antibiotics for 6 weeks last summer because doctor told her he was afraid of Lyme disease. Okay, so that's her background. So far, they've done an elimination diet, including foods that heal the gut and keeping the guts out that harm. So she's doing a good job there. Great place to start. Hopefully also working with chewing and the kind of food hygiene. She's been doing great with all these suggestions with diet. She did some supplementation with a gut restore powder, probiotic, and zinc carnosine. Has been juicing and doing blended greens daily. Added in a greens powder with Sun Warrior protein to her smoothies. Has been adding in meditation and breathing to help manage stress. So you've really done a lot of really great things with her, Patty. She no longer has diarrhea and has normal bowel movements for the first time since she can remember. She even went to Paris and did some things that she could previously would have made her sick and did not have a reaction. Bloating and stomach pain are gone, and she's able to eat raw veggies, greens, beans, onions, and garlic with no problem. Energy's back, and joint pain is mostly gone. Sleeping through the night and wakes up feeling mostly rested. Lost about 5 pounds. Inflammatory markers went down. This is like a super success story. Taking multivitamins, vitamin E, fish oil, magnesium, probiotics, turmeric, Synthroid for the thyroid. Had an IUD for several years and decided to have it removed a couple of months ago and notices she feels much better. So this person has been in good hands, obviously, with just the simple stuff. This just really goes to show us how a lot of the really simple stuff can go a long way. So we don't look for the zebras, we look for the horses. So she cleaned up her diet, cleaned up her act. I'd love to see how her thyroid is doing as a result. So I'm wondering if there's particular questions. Yeah. So yeah, all the good habits we already talked. Her stress level is about a 5. She's working on that. She's raising 2 children. Synthroid is the only medication, and she's currently taking vitamin D, magnesium, fish oil, and turmeric. And this is her habits. You know, she exercises 4 times a week. She doesn't know about her outdoor time, but that would be good to get her outdoors just in general. She does meditation. She does greens. She's eating vegetables. She doesn't drink alcohol. She is consuming caffeine once a week. Soft drinks never. Sugar never. Eating out never. Fast food. So she has 1 cup of coffee a week. Purified water 5 or more times a week, sleeping. So she's sleeping. I mean, she's doing a lot of things right. So the only thing that I, you know, in looking at this, it looks like she's off of her allergens. She said she's still eating egg, even though it shows up on this allergy profile. So, and she's not having a reaction. But what you don't get is that the reaction can be happening on a level that you're not seeing. So it's just propagating the inflammation in a lot of different places. It could be affecting the thyroid. It could affect everything. So I would recommend you get her off the egg as well, at least for another 3 months, and just kind of keep going with what you're doing. You can certainly look at stool tests. There's so many things you can look at, but you're on the right track with what you're doing so far. These are her numbers. Let's look at some other things. So cholesterol, 180, that's fine. Triglycerides are 100, a little on the high side. HDL, 55. So when we do the ratio of triglycerides to HDL, we're almost at 2-to-1, which is a little high, which makes me think maybe there's some blood sugar issues going on here. So I would recommend you get a hemoglobin A1C. So here's some other of her numbers. The BUN is 13, which is a little on the low side and could be indicative of low absorption of protein or low intake of protein. Her protein is 6.4. It used to be 6.8. Those numbers were like back in 2014. So it's gone down. So her protein absorption or her utilization or her protein intake has gone down. So I would be working on that. Her alkaline phosphatase is 46, used to be 51. That's oftentimes an indicator of zinc. So if she was on the zinc carnosine, you might want to put her back on that zinc and get her up there again. Her MCV is 95. It was 100, so it's gotten better. MCV elevated would be an indication of folate or B12 or both, or B6 sometimes, but mostly folate and B12 deficiency. So I'd be looking at her B12. Monocytes are 8, which means it's a little high, so there may be a chronic infection or she's recovering from an infection with monocytes. Neutrophils are 37 and lymphs 53, so that would be more of an indicator, like Tiffany's daughter, that there might be a viral infection. Neutrophils should be up in the like 60 range, and lymphs should be down in the 25 to 30 range. So I think that there's probably some kind of viral thing going on. Again, you might want to look at hepatitis. You may want to look at EBV as a possibility. And that was that. So, you know, as far as the case is concerned, I would be looking at what might be causing this. I would be looking at the B12. B12 can help certainly with digestion and absorption as well. I would be continuing on the anti-inflammatories, get her off the egg and anything else that she's on currently that showed up in her allergy test. Possibly, you know, more, I don't have thyroid numbers, so I don't know how her thyroid's doing, but seeing how her thyroid's doing as a result of all this, and then look at blood sugar balance. And EBV is definitely common with Hashimoto's. Okay, so what else do we have? Lynn said she should use this as her case study presentation. Yeah, you could. She could. She could just write this up according to our guidelines, and I'll talk about the guidelines in a bit for a certification. Caffeine could be chocolate, absolutely. Rita Marie, can you speak as to how when to do a case study presentation versus getting help with the case? I'm curious if I work with my client over time, I'll be able to use it as a case study presentation eventually, or does have you do a presentation disqualify this as a case? No, you can write this up. You have to go through the process of writing it up as a case according to the guidelines, and then you have to show what you did, and then you'd show what you did continuing on from here and follow it through. Many types of Synthroid, good point, Laura, have gluten in them. Lanette and Mova brands are the only brands that I'm aware of that don't contain gluten. That's good to know. So, Patty, that's a good thing for her to look at. EBV is common with Hashimoto's. It is. You know, Lynn and I have been reading this book called The Medical Medium, and he has got a lot of interesting approaches to EBV. You might want to take a look at that. Good question, Jamie. He says, speaking of infections, do you have any experience using lauricidin, ionic silver, or lysine to counterbalance high arginine foods? Yeah, so definitely use lysine. I use lysine whenever somebody has a herpes-like infection, you know, whether it's the lip or the genitals. I've used lauricidin mostly years ago. I used it for, it was more for gut stuff. Lauric acid, which is where it comes from, is in coconut. So coconut oil is a good thing, or coconut, the whole food, is good. And I've used ionic silver for more acute things like colds and flus. I haven't used it more long term. Laura said she's reading the Medical Medium book as well. Very interesting. Yeah, so good thing to look at. So, you know, I think that's pretty much it. That was a great case of Patty stepping in and making these changes here to this person's diet, and the person really complying and seeing a lot of major improvements. I'd be very curious to see what happens with her thyroid antibodies as well over time. So I would love to see that followed up. Michelle says, is ionic silver in liquid form? I've usually used it in liquid form. It's possible that it may come in capsule form, but I've used it in liquid form. Oh, and Steph says, I love red seaweeds for the lysine and also gut healing and also antiviral properties. So there you go, Nori Dulce and others. You know, I've been interesting. This week has been seaweed week for me, and I had arame and I finished it up and I wanted more seaweed. So I've been having these big bowls of maitake, dried maitake mushrooms, put in a bowl with a whole bunch of dulse and nori crumpled up, and then pour hot water over it and then season it. And it's been yummy. And talk about a great antiviral soup. Yummy. Yummy. Yeah, you could use ionic silver. Jeff, anybody ever used the ionic silver? I think it's pretty mild. I don't think it would hurt. I can't remember if I've ever used it in the neti pot. But 14 more days, Laura. And you asked a question earlier about still getting gas and bloating when you're on that protocol. And whew, you know, it might be something. It's really hard when you're doing something like that and you do eliminate all those gazillion foods and you're still having the gas and bloating. I would ask, is it any better than it was before? Or is it still the same? And have you noticed it with worse with particular meals, and try to identify if there's particular foods that are causing it? I'm not a big fan of that diet just because it's so restrictive. And so Steph said, yeah, she's used the silver nasal spray. Yeah, they do make silver nasal spray, so that makes sense. And Sequoia said you make sure you use good quality silver. So if anybody has particular brands that they recommend, go ahead and post them. There's a newer one. I've used their nano zeolite to help with detoxing metals. Oh, zeolite, thank you for bringing up. Zeolite would be a really good thing for liver, you know, for helping to cleanse the liver. Zeolite, you just have to make sure you do, if you're doing the powdered kind, that you do plenty of water with it and that you don't take it with your other supplements because it can pull out some of your other supplements. Planning to do another stool test if I don't improve after 30 days on the SIBO diet. And then, of course, with the SIBO diet, are you taking any of those antimicrobials and doing anything particularly for the MMC? So I know you're doing the gargling and all that for the vagus nerve, and that helps the MMC, but you might want to look at the Modal Pro from Pure Encapsulations. Could be helpful. LDN, yeah. That's right, you are taking LDN. Lynn said she likes the liquid zeolite. I've used the liquid zeolite, but they're so expensive. They're like $40 for this little bottle, and I started using the Health Force powdered zeolite.